Hi, everyone. We'll get started now. I'm Brian Colello, hardware semiconductor analyst with Morningstar. With us today is Ali Hussein, the director of investor relations at Analog Devices. ADI is a $16 billion market cap company and a leader in the analog chip space. The company pays out close to a 3% dividend today and has established a policy to pay out 80% of free cash flow over time. We assign ADI with a wide economic moat based on intangible assets and switching costs around its proprietary analog chip designs. So Ali has a short presentation for us, and after that we'll go with Q&A and we'll open it up to the audience. So Ali, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Brian. Good afternoon, everyone. So thanks for dropping by for the presentation. I promise I'll keep this short. Requisite forward-looking statements slide that our lawyers have me present. Normally, every earnings call, I'm the guy responsible for reading this, so thankfully, I won't have to read it today. So ADI, we're a $3 billion a year high-performance analog semiconductor company. Our technology really focuses on bridging the gap between the real world of analog, where we all live, and the world of digital, or what we call the world of processors. So every sensor that gets deployed out there in the world represents an opportunity for ADI to really bridge that gap between that sensor and the processor. So we're focused on sustainable innovation to drive profitable growth. To that end, we have been refocusing our business over the last few years. So just 3 or 4 years ago, consumer was a much larger piece of our business than it is today. And so we've really focused in on sustainable innovation. And for us, that means focusing in on the B2B space, and that means industrial, automotive, and communications infrastructure, which taken together today account for about 88% of our total sales. Now, what that refocusing has done in the near term, it has impacted our total top-line growth. If you look at the core business of industrial, auto, and comps, that's been growing quite nicely. But certainly when you defocus some areas, that does impact your total growth rate. Our sense now is that consumer is about 10% of our sales, so that's a good mix of business for ADI, and that the headwinds that we were facing from exiting some of these commodity areas within consumer are largely behind us. So we have a diverse business in terms of our markets, our customers, and even in the regions that we operate. So for example, we sell over 20,000 different SKUs to over 100,000 customers. There's no one customer that accounts for more than 2 or 3% of our total sales. And in the case of some of our largest industrial customers, we may actually be selling well over 1,000 SKUs to them. So a very diverse business. And in terms of cash generation and return of cash to shareholders, our cash flow model is to generate free cash flow in the range of 28 to 32% of sales. And as Brian mentioned in the introduction, our goal is to return 80% of that cash flow to shareholders, largely in the form of dividends. So a quick walkthrough here, our industrial market, or our end markets. As you can see, the industrial end market is the largest end market for ADI. It accounts for about half our sales. And you can see automotive and communications infrastructure also make up a good chunk of what we do. Within industrial, you know, you see it there. It's a large piece of the pie. It seems to be a big old monolith. It really isn't. You know, when you bury down between that business, we have 5 different subsegments within there and probably 25 businesses beneath that level. So that's where we have our tens of thousands of customers, you know, 20,000 parts that go towards servicing them. Industrial instrumentation and automation together make up about half of what we're doing in industrial today. And clearly the title says it all, 88% of revenue is now from the B2B space. Now, from a product or technology standpoint, 72% of our total sales are derived from 2 product categories where we lead the market. And as you can see here, converters and amplifiers are really, when you think conceptually about that bridge from the sensor to the processor, converters and amplifiers really form the concrete blocks, as you might call them, on that bridge between, you know, those two areas. And really, you know, it forms a fantastic moat around our business, which is really, you know, the theme of our conference. We've been in business for 50 years. We've been working very hard to perfect this craft. So where today I can stand in front of you in Chicago and point out to you that, you know, well over 2/3 of our sales are coming from these kind of wide moat areas. Every sensor that gets deployed out there that captures a real-world signal represents an opportunity for ADI signal processing. So this really crystallizes a lot of what we do at ADI. Now, I mentioned earlier the diversity of our business. This is a chart showing our quarterly sales broken out by the year of product release. I know it's hard to tell in the right-hand side. It gets very small. But we are selling parts that we put out in the early 1970s, which is, I don't want to date myself, but it's around the time I was born, but probably similar to the folks in this room, I guess. And so, you know, these products have very, very long life cycles. They generate a lot of cash. At the same time, you can see from this chart that we're constantly having to refill that pipeline. So, you know, approximately a quarter of our sales are from new products. By that, we mean products that we put out within the last 5 years. Now, the interesting thing about these products, they take several years to ramp. But when they do, as you can see from this chart, it's almost like a bond portfolio where you put your innovation out. It takes a while for the revenues to ramp, but when they do, they pay off for decades in certain cases here. So over the past few years, as I mentioned earlier, we've been refocusing our business. Clearly, this has impacted our overall growth rate, but if you look at ADI on a trailing 12-month basis here, on a 5-year CAGR, our core business in the B2B area of industrial, auto, and comms has grown, compounded 9%. Similarly, on a year-over-year basis, we've also grown 9%. But as you can see, the top line has been impacted by our exit from the commodity areas of consumer. I'd say we're only now really starting to see, because what we ended up doing was taking those R&D dollars out of the consumer space, putting those R&D dollars into the industrial auto comm space that have longer design cycles and obviously pay off a nice revenue stream over those, you know, the years that those products are out there. But we're now starting to see the benefit of those investments. The design cycles are long. We've been refocusing for the last 3-4 years, and we're now starting to see the revenues from that. So I think the best clearly is going to be yet to come here for ADI. So in this next chart, you know, while we were reshaping our business, we've also been very busy returning a lot of cash to you, our shareholders. And as this chart will show, since fiscal 2004, we've returned over $7 billion in cash to shareholders. We also have a target, as I mentioned earlier, to return 80% of our free cash flow to shareholders. So we actually recently closed on a deal, on an acquisition. We acquired a company in Massachusetts called Hittite Microwave. It represents a $2 billion enterprise value. It adds great technology, helps us with our growth rate as well, and also fills in a bunch of gaps here on the frequency spectrum, as you can see from the bottom of this chart. Again, driving towards this goal of sustainable, profitable growth. So given the way our business looks today, we laid out these financial targets earlier in the summer, and we feel that we can generate gross margins in the range of 65 to 68%. Our recent quarter, we had gross margins of about 66.5%, so we're firmly there. Operating margins and cash from operations in the 32 to 36% range, and free cash flow, as I mentioned earlier, of 28 to 32%. That does on the leverage side of the house, as we feel we can easily grow our business to generate earnings growth of 8 to 15% annually, and for dividend growth of 5 to 10% a year. So this was a little new for semiconductor companies. Again, you know, when you look at ADI, we are termed as a semiconductor company, but we really kind of straddle the edges of industrial and semiconductors. So this was a little new for our historical investor base, but we really wanted to lay out a target for what we think we can do in terms of earnings growth. And so based on the inputs from the prior slide and our refocused business, we believe we can get to $4 to $5 in EPS by 2020, or by the end of 2020. And, you know, based on the estimates for our fiscal 14 of earnings to be in the range of about $2.40 or in that range, we have quite a task to get there. But, you know, again, I think the way the business breaks out today, given the leverage of the model, we think we can achieve this target. So overall, you know, we believe our innovation will drive profitable growth. We play in diverse markets with diversified products, and the combination of all of that, we believe, will continue to drive returns to shareholders. So So that's my prepared piece of today, the presentation, and we can hop into Q&A now, Brian, if you'd like.
Yep.
Was there any questions?
No, I think that was perfect.
Great.
I'll start with the first one, and then I'll open up to the audience first. Could you just give an overview of near-term business conditions and what you're seeing today?
Sure. So we just recently reported our results. That was for our July quarter. Our industrial and communications infrastructure businesses both grew quite strongly. Sequentially, the entire business was up 4% on an organic basis. Year over year, the business was up 7%. Looking forward to our October quarter, it's our best sense that industrial, which is, as you saw in an earlier slide, about half our sales, will be down slightly, but that we will see growth from the areas of automotive, communications infrastructure, and consumer. So, in total, we think the organic business will grow about 1% next quarter. Growth seems to be accelerating here because we grew 7% organically in the July quarter. Our estimate is we'll grow 8%. Organically in the October quarter. Inventories are in good shape. The distributor channel, which accounts for a little more than half our sales, that is a good proxy for the industrial market. Inventory in the distributor channel is at 7.5 weeks. That's within our model. That number has been at about 7.5 weeks now for several quarters. So, you know, things are getting better, is our sense. There's a modest curve, I guess, to this recovery, and things seem to be in good shape.
Okay, great. I'll open it up to questions if anyone has it. Dan has a microphone in the back and can bring it around. Otherwise, I'm happy to keep going. Yes?
Industrial is going to be down year over year, you're thinking, Doctor?
Well, I think industrial will probably be up on a year over year basis, but my comment around the sequential and kind of why we guided it down sequentially slightly was, you know, when you look at the broad base of the industrial customers, they're doing quite well, you know. And those are the guys that are really tied to PMI and GDP and the macro. They've actually done quite well, and our sense is that they'll continue to do well in the October quarter. What's maybe a little anomalous is that the fourth quarter for ADI, the October quarter, we have an ATE business, semiconductor ATE business, and that's seasonally down in that quarter. We also had a particularly good performance in some of the more programmatic areas of industrial in our July quarter. So, for example, aerospace and defense and energy. And our sense is that, you know, it was a great quarter, but it's probably going to be a little weaker in the fourth. But, you know, taking a step back, it's really the broad base of customers within industrial that are doing quite well.
We hear now that hybrids and electric vehicles are not selling well.
Okay.
Comments, because it seems to me you're going to rely on those to help your business in the automotive area.
No, that's a great question. So for ADI, automotive is about 18% of our total sales. We have three sub-businesses. We have an infotainment business, a safety business, and a powertrain business. So your question is really specific to the powertrain business. And the question, if you didn't hear it, the question was, you know, will... I guess there's been some impact on the growth rate of hybrid and electric vehicles and whether that would impact ADI's sales. So for us, interestingly enough, we've taken a bet that the hybrid electric vehicle market is interesting, and certainly there is growth opportunity. There are growth opportunities there. It is an area that drives more and more content in vehicles. But our bet has actually been largely on the lead-acid battery monitoring side. So internal combustion engines, which are much more widely used, where consumers have really said, you know, we like cars that have good performance, just try and make them more efficient. The areas of diesel engines, for example, that would be a good example, but just purely gasoline engines, you're getting more and more efficiency, more and more power out of smaller engines. Four-cylinder engines today are doing what maybe six-cylinder engines did 10 years ago, and that's really our focus. You know, we do certainly have some piece of our business that's tied to HEV, but a lot of what we're doing in the powertrain side of NAS is actually having a regular engine and trying to make it more energy efficient. So what we actually have there is a very interesting technology that marries a bunch of things that we do in automotive and, frankly, what we do in the rest of ADI. We're able to take a converter, we're able to take a sensor, and we're able to embed an ARM microcontroller within this IC It basically is able to sense when the car stops and then shut down all the internal systems in the vehicle. And we use it for start-stop technology. And that, in Europe right now, where it's more prevalent than in the United States, has unbelievable market share. And our sense is as that technology flows down and flows obviously throughout the world to really hit some of these fuel efficiency mandates that are out there, that should benefit our business. I think there's a stat out there that Ford, by 2017, is looking to have 70% of their fleet outfitted with start-stop technology. And if the business comes to ABI, I think we'll do quite well there.
Axum and Linear considered key competitors? You're all in the same airbox space, right?
Ooh, is that the question, or is that the reality?
If that's true, maybe I'm missing another one, but whatever you consider the group, how do you differentiate yourself on that?
No, that's a great question. I think what's happened over the last few years is, particularly as you've gone through this great recession, is I think companies have really focused in, and I think that's the general statement, it's not just semiconductor land, but I think companies have really focused in on their core competencies. What are you really, truly good at? And for ADI, that's been doubling down on the signal path, which is sensor to processor. For the other folks that are out there in the industry, they're bets on power management. And it's a fundamentally different way of looking at it. Now, there are parts of our business that overlap with theirs, but overall, I think companies have really focused in on, as I mentioned earlier, the areas they're very good at. Either that's power. In the case of one of the other names you mentioned, that might be a bigger focus on the consumer space. But for us, it's been on the signal path, and it's really been doubling down on industrial auto communications infrastructure. So, we look at our market positioning. I didn't put that slide up there. But we have about 50% of the market on data converters. We have about the same number on high-performance amplifiers. And those two product categories together, we derive 72% of our sales from there. So I think we're fairly well protected from a moat standpoint.
That segues into my next question. How did ADI, because ADI is the analog is very fragmented. ADI is the only firm with such a substantial market share lead in any subsegment of the market. How did you develop, such a commanding market share lead in signal path, and how have you maintained it over time?
Yeah, that's a great question. So ADI has been around for 50 years. This is not a company that was formed in Silicon Valley 2 years ago with two guys on a computer. We've been doing this for a long time. A lot of our business is actually looks like a pure industrial business, and so for us, it's been a question of focus. Where do you focus your R&D? Because God knows R&D is not infinite. You've got to really target the areas you feel position you for the best growth and for profitable growth, and where you can sustain your advantage over decades. And so for ADI, that's been on data converters and amplifiers, really creating that bridge between the real world and the digital world. Other folks have focused in on other areas, but for us, this has been the focus. I think over and above the technology piece of it, which clearly every year you'll roll out new technology, and obviously we spend to do that. But it's a question of brand recognition. It's a question of high levels of service to customers. It's a question of you've just been doing this so long, and you've been doing it so well that you get the first call when customers are kind of building out their systems. It's very interesting. When engineers sit out there and they actually whiteboard these things, the first thing they think about is obviously the sensor that captures the signal. They think about how am I going to get that signal, which is in a very noisy environment, to try and pick out the real signal that you're looking for and get it over the processor. These are very, very hard things to do. And then the last thing they tend to think about is, well, how do I power up the solution? And so I think from our point of view, that getting the signal out of all of that noise that we're constantly bombarded with in this world is the area that we've really focused in on. I think the other interesting piece of it, and I may be stealing your question later, but one of the other interesting things in this story is that the schools out there, right, universities are no longer teaching analog engineering. They're focused on digital. And because, by the way, 10 years ago, everyone said, well, why are you called analog devices? Shouldn't you be called digital devices? Analog seems like it's so old and stale. But as the world goes more and more digital, there's going to be a need for more and more analog. But the universities tend to teach, whatever's cutting edge, and analog tends to be lagging edge. And so when we get folks out of school, we have a program that regardless of what's happening out there in the Great Recession or whatever the world is falling apart, we hire 50 to 150 new hires from the top schools throughout the world. We bring them in, and for a period of 5 to 7 years, they work under very, very senior folks at our company. These might be folks that they've actually read about in their school textbooks, actually. Some of them might have been even a professor in one of their early engineering classes, and really kind of the gurus of the analog space. And so we bring these folks in, train them up for 5 to 7 years. You know, clearly there is some element of attrition, but it's quite low, and after 5 or 7 years, they tend to stay with ADI for a very, very long time. And I think that's something we've focused in on very hard to do, because I think at the end of the day, the lifeblood of this company are the engineers. And that's really been our focus.
Also a question.
Here's a microphone.
Another question related to R&D, and this is probably pretty naive, but when you're innovating, is the innovation around taking an existing product and making it smaller? Is the innovation around taking an existing product that processes a particular signal and processing the signal in a sharper way? Or is it, oh, we have this new sensor out here, let's make a product that works with that sensor, takes that signal, and puts it to a processor? Or all of the above, or some other area, more kind of color around.
Absolutely. I think, you know, that's a great question. And I think you probably answered half of it, which is it's certainly all of the above. But there is an interesting dynamic. So, you know, when the new folks come out of schools these days, they don't know how to do analog engineering. We bring them in, we train them. When you come out of school and you want to be a great analog engineer, there's probably only two companies on the planet you want to work for. ADI is one of them. And yet we have a very hard time filling that pipeline of engineers. If we have a hard time doing it, you can imagine how the customers that we deal with, what they're doing. So increasingly, customers are saying, you know, you guys take care of the entire conversion process. You guys give me the hardware solution that I need. I'm going to sit back. I've got engineers that focus in on software, and I'm going to focus in on the areas I'm good at. I don't have the capability on the hardware side. You guys do it, which is great. From our point of view, you know, we tend to get early line of sight in terms of their systems, their roadmaps 10 years down the road. It certainly impacts our R&D investments because we have some level of visibility in terms of what they're going to do. The interesting thing in all of that, then, is you're not just talking about a converter or an amplifier. You're really thinking systems. There is a fundamental shift underway. It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. We're certainly investing ahead of that trend. But to your question, it's all of the above, and the backdrop to that is that we're just being asked to do more. We'll happily do it, because when customers are pulling technology from you rather than you pushing it on them, I think the dynamic is very positive, I think we're happy.
If I could ask a follow-up on that similar question, is it, because part of the way I've thought about R&D is spending in new areas, and when I think about even M&A and a lot of the larger analog companies like you know, Hittite is a relatively larger deal, but typically it's bolt-on acquisitions, it's filling parts of the product portfolio. Is some of this R&D a similar signal path and similar products for a new application, like maybe start-stop or, you know, hybrid vehicles, or, you know, how much are you able to leverage your prior R&D versus how much of it, if you're going into a new application, is coming from scratch?
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is, I don't think you look to ADI as being the company that's levered to the killer app or the killer smartphone or, you know, 20% growth opportunity in a market where, you know, it's just small and there's very few competitors out there and very few suppliers. We tend to be very, very broad-based. So I think in and of itself, no one thing is going to move the needle. You know, we've been doing this for 50 years. We've got an unbelievable amount of technology and R&D and IP already built up. And we tend to basically have very, very good core technology, and then taking pinpoints and harnessing that technology in particular spots. You know, the start-stop technology, I think, is a great example where, you know, this product category didn't exist 10 years ago. What was start-stop? Nobody knew what the heck this thing was. And now it's going to be rolled out, and, you know, probably our kids one day won't even know when their car stops because they'll just be used to it. That's just how it is. That's how things progress. So I think there is certainly an element of new product categories that come out in certain areas that we're interested in pursuing. But it's a question of being able to take what you're already doing on single path, maybe tweaking it a little bit to really hit that solution. But, you know, for ADI, we're so diverse and we're so broad-based that, you know, for every 10 customers that we have like that, that are very kind of focused in on a particular application, we might have another 50,000 customers that they don't care. All they want is that product from 1972 is in the mail when I order it from ADI. And I'm probably looking at a catalog because, you know, I don't want to use a website because I'm buying stuff from 1972. I'm generalizing. So I'm sure people are.
So to throw another buzzword out there, if you think about like Internet of Things, more often than not, it sounds like, you know, this is, you know, the sort of companies that want to play in this space, whether it's whether it's home security or industrial, it's much more likely than not going to ADI and your salesman or your field engineers showing the customer what you have already, mm-hmm. rather than go back to the drawing board.
Well, it's so interesting, this whole dynamic, particularly in the industrial space. You know, customers in the industrial side are asking us, what is this stuff? You know, how do we connect up all our machines? How do we get all of that rich data flowing back to some kind of a central hub so we can do data analytics? These are conversations that are happening. I mean, part of the reason we did this acquisition of Intite Microwave is that we had customers in industrial, in automotive, comms infrastructure saying, we need more microwave and millimeter wave technology. You know, there's spectrum is limited. Folks are not, you know, governments aren't auctioning off spectrum every day. So you're limited by spectrum, and yet at the end of the day, things are getting more and more and more connected, and things are requiring more and more precision and performance. And the only way to do that is to scale up, the frequency spectrum. And so, what was the first part of the question?
Just the Internet of Things.
Oh, right, the Internet of Things. So, you know, topic. So I think, look, at the end of the day, this Internet of Things is going to require all kinds of connectivity. And I think, you know, we have the entire frequency spectrum now in the IoT. Everything from RF to microwave to millimeter wave. And at the end of the day, it requires sensing, it requires connectivity, and it requires processing. And I'd argue that ADI has a play in all three of those areas. Where are we today in terms of the Internet of Things, or I guess we call it Internet of Signal Processing, or whatever you call it? We're probably quite early in the business-to-business area. Consumers are probably going to have ice trays that talk to them and toasters that tell them when to cook their bread or whatever. But that's probably going to happen sooner than it happens on the industrial side, as it usually does. You know, industrial takes its time, but once it cranks in, it tends to do well for a long period of time. An example would be in the area of automotive. Today, you know, something like 10% of vehicles are connected, and they're, by 2020, the estimate is that that'll move up to about 90%. So those are the kinds of time frames we're thinking about, 2 to 5 years. But hey, we've got the technology, our doors are open. We'd love to sell it. So.
Okay, terrific.
Could you talk a little bit about your presenting your sales to go to distributors and what the relationships are there? Because I remember the industry, guys, you always have a problem with distributors oversupplying or overstocking. Your business goes away because nobody's buying.
Yeah, no, I think that dynamic has perhaps changed. So a good chunk of what we do is through distribution. Probably 55% of our sales are run through the distributor channel. I think what the distributors have gotten very good at is managing their working capital. They tend to keep inventories for what they believe they'll have end customer orders for. And I think, you know, it's what they call the turns and earns business, which is basically it comes through the door, next thing you know, it's shipped out. I don't think there is a lot of incentive for the distributors to carry more than they need. And, we haven't really seen. I mean, I think in the old days, maybe going back several years, you know, they maybe wanted to keep more inventory. What we've seen over the last few years is, you know, they keep what they need, and they don't tend to order much more. Now, of course, for ADI, it makes no impact because our revenue recognition is only when the distributors sell through to their end customers. So we are completely agnostic. And it goes to this philosophy at ADI of, you know, our basic position is quite conservative to start off with. And so even our revenue recognition through the channel is also quite conservative.
In ADI, be willing to put out a 2020 target? Is that, should we read through that, that the business itself is not highly cyclical, that you would, you know, that you would suggest that visibility?
So I think that's, I mean, certainly, I guess it depends on who you talk to. But what we've seen over the past few years is there's not been much cyclicality in this business. You certainly, you know, you get some periods of growth and it kind of flatlines a bit and it'll grow a little bit. You know, when you get a cycle is when there's too much inventory out there and people double order and do kinds of silly things. For ADI, we keep very short lead times. Our lead times are 4 to 6 weeks. And we deliver somewhere around 97% of our orders within 4 to 6 weeks. Those lead times don't tend to stretch. We carry pretty good levels of inventory on our balance sheet. You know, part of why we do have good brand recognition and high levels of service is we do keep, you know, three and a half months worth of inventory on our balance sheet just to make sure that we're servicing our customers. So if anything, I think maybe the suppliers like ADI are maybe carrying a little more inventory just to be on the safe side. There is a lot of chatter about, you know, is this a new normal? And I think what we've seen over the last few years seems to suggest that, you know, if folks don't need it, there is no incentive to carry more than they need.
Brian,
you're feeling left out.
I was going to say, it's always better to have more questions.
Good.
Less. But I'll start with this one. So basically, when you talk about your EPS targets and your growth, other than the operating leverage side, if we're talking about top-line growth, it sounds like this will really come more from the signal processing side, and excluding the Hittite acquisition, but your organic growth will be more staying in your lane, growing signal processing side, rather than trying to diversify out into other products. Is that a fair statement?
So from our point of view, we have 100,000 customers, so I think we're in the customers and the markets that we want to play in, that we want to be, you know, partnering up with or selling to. On the product side, clearly you're always going to have something that you're going to need to add. The question then becomes, do you do it organically or do you go out and you buy it? And I think our base position is that we prefer to do it internally, and to the extent that, you know, the buy versus make decision doesn't make a lot of sense, then we would look to acquire a company. But coming, Peter, come back to your earlier question about, you know, the cyclicality of the business, it certainly feels like it is more muted. But calling 2020 is obviously very hard when you're sitting at the kind of the tail end of 2014. So if I was to asterisk, you know, that EPS target, I would say, well, look, if there is a cycle, a so-called thing called a cycle, all bets are off. But at the end of the day, the reason we put that number out was it really crystallizes how we want to run this company. We've got great technology. We refocus the business. But what does that mean on an earnings number? And it's how do you run that business in accordance with those targets. And we're not going to be a business that goes out there and cuts its way to that EPS number. It's a question of sustainable, profitable growth. Certainly if you have a cycle, you know, all bets are off, but we're not planning for it, clearly. We're planning to build this business, grow it profitably to get there.
Hey, Brian, we probably have time for about one more question.
Okay. All right, well, I'll start with this. You mentioned, you know, half the business industrial. Another key area is communications infrastructure, and particularly, you know, the signal processing is key in the base station. What is your view of that end market? Certainly, you have the China LTE build-outs helping today. Certainly, there's LTE build-outs and even 3G domestic markets as well. How should we think about that market long-term? Is this, I understand that it's lumpy from time to time, but we had a big lump where it, you know, where maybe flatlines thereafter. Do we still see, you know, tremendous growth over the next few years? How should we think about that long-term?
Let me break out my crystal ball here, and I'll tell you all about it. You know, the problem with that market, in a sense, or the challenge, is that it is extremely lumpy. I mean, for ADI, we really are all about the radio solution. So as more and more of these base stations out there get built, and even if, you know, there are refreshes of existing infrastructure, that's great for us because that just means more radios. But again, that is driven by, you know, a customer or a carrier at the other end that's looking to drive that, and so you're kind of at their whims. It's very unlike the rest of the things that we do at API. But we like this market. The reason we like it is, at the end of the day, you should never bet against the consumer. Because at the end of the day, there is a person behind that device on their phone, or even the case of industrial customers, for example, with things getting more and more connected up. But at the end of the day, there's always a consumer out there that's driving this. And so consumers are engaging in more and more high bandwidth applications, be it video,
or gaming. There's more and more devices getting connected up, and they're all limited by spectrum. And so the beauty of ADI is we tend not to bet against the consumer. We say, okay, well, that's the trend. We're going to invest ahead of that trend. We might not be in that consumer device. Chances are we are not in that consumer device, but we make all the infrastructure behind that experience possible. So in this case, we are in base stations. The radios are going up there. Our sense is that, you know, this has been a great year for us. You know, do we kind of tap out here and flatline from here? I think you're going to see periods that are lumpy. Looking to 2015, I think our best sense is that the capacity deployments in the U.S. will continue, that Europe switches on and already has. You know, it started in its coverage phase for 4G LTE, and that China continues its TD and FD builds as well in 2015. So, again, it's hard to call the timing of these things, but the fundamental thesis of why we're playing in the space is still there, that there's going to be more and more things getting connected up, and you're going to need folks to go out there and put these radios on there so that all of this communication can happen. Now, the other thing that we did is, in investing ahead of this trend is 5 years ago, we invested quite heavily in what we call these integrated transceivers. These are software-defined radios. They're wideband radios. We're absolutely agnostic to the band chosen in China or the U.S. These radios will work basically no matter where. and what they do is they're able to integrate, I think early to your earlier question, they're able to integrate a whole bunch of different functionality. So we're ADI, our positioning is everywhere from, you know, the signal capture that comes in from a phone, for example, the signal capture all the way down to where the processor does its work. So that can be, you know, the converter, the amplifier, there's clocking, there's some digital, there's some power, all that stuff gets put onto one IC at 65 nanometer. It's very low power. This is stuff that is very, very hard to do. And it's particularly well suited for these higher bandwidth type you know, applications and technologies. So as we move from 3G to 4G, we tend to get a higher piece of the bill of materials on a blended basis. So, you know, all these deployments are good. And the other thing is, you know, when you look out to the world, there's only about 180 million users of LTE today. And that's expected to obviously shoot much higher over the course of time as more and more folks sort of come into the fold. And of those 180 million users, they're all concentrated in three countries, the U.S., Japan, and Korea. So our sense is there's plenty of green fields out there. There's plenty of opportunity. But it's very hard to call the timing of these things. But, you know, the trend is good.
Okay, terrific. Well, Ali, thank you again.
Sure.
For your time.